Hello, and welcome to the Preview Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting items from the current month's solicitations as picked by listeners like you. This is Preview Spotlight number 207 for the February 2025 solicitations, with highlights picked by listeners like you. In this episode, we'll be going over some of the items in the upcoming solicitations that you might find interesting. Now, comics are a pre-order business, so whether we like it or not, it behooves us to take a look at what's going to be offered a couple of months out and let our retailers know so they can order appropriately. Now, these episodes have an open submission policy, and I encourage you to send in clips to promote the comics you love as often as you can. Now, there are thousands of items solicited every month, and it's easy for things to get lost in the shuffle, or just fly beneath your radar. We'll be starting with the DC Connect catalog, followed by the Marvel's Previews catalog, and then working our way through the Diamond Previews catalog. Obviously, we aren't going to go item by item, or page by page, or even publisher by publisher. We're just going to hit the highlights, and those highlights are picked by people like you. So with that, let's get going. My first pick is the pre-order catalogs, of which there are so many to choose from. There's DC Connect, there's the Image catalog, the IDW catalog, the Marvel previews, the Diamond previews, the Next Phase catalog over at Lunar, and then there are some items that are in no catalog whatsoever, because they're on Kickstarter or some other thing. But we like to cover all of those things here in the Preview Spotlight, and I like going through all of these catalogs. Now granted, it does take a little time. You can get digital copies of all of these. We've got some links in the forum threads for these episodes. But it's a great way to find out what's coming up, what's for you, and what's not. Because not everything is for everybody. There are certain comics some people are going to love, I'm not going to like, some I'm going to like, and other people aren't going to love. And that's great. That's why we do these episodes. But that's also why you need to look at these pre-order catalogs. Not every shop is going to get every comic, so to make sure they get the ones you want, you need to know what you want, you got to let your retailer know. So I recommend picking up the pre-order catalogs either digitally or physically for the ones that are available physically, because not all of them are. Spend a little time once a month going through it, see what's available, maybe you'll find something that'll become your new favorite comic in the future. So once again, that's the pre-order catalogs of DC Connect, Image Catalog, IDW Catalog, Marvel Previews, Diamond Previews, Next Phase, No Catalog, and whatever other catalogs come out in the future.
Hi, I'm Billy Hogan, host of the Superman Fan Podcast, and I go by Superman Fan on the forums. My first DC pick is on page 2 with Summer of Superman Special Number 1, written by Dan Slott, Joshua Williamson, and Mark Waid, with art and cover by Jorge Jimenez, and that's the cover I'll be getting. Variant covers are also done by Alexander Lozano, John Jiang, Mahmoud Azrar, and Chrissy Zulo Uminga. A 1-in-25 ratio variant cover by Dan Jurgens, and a foil variant cover by Jorge Jimenez. The cover price is $5.99 for 48 pages and is scheduled to go on sale on April 30th. The Man of Steel and his universe of friends, family, allies, and rogues is in for some big changes, and it all starts in the Summer of Superman special. Brought to you by Superman series architects Joshua Williamson, who works on Superman, Mark Waid, who works on Superman in Action Comics, and making his grand entrance to the world of tomorrow, Dan Slott. This special oversized issue will set the stage for all the major events exploding throughout the Superman titles. When John Henry Irons and Lana Lang take their vows, everyone turns up for the big day. But trouble is brewing on the horizon as threats from the past, present, and future kick off major new conflicts for the Superman family. Brought to stunning life by the incomparable art of Jorge Jimenez, who did art for Batman and Super Sons, the Summer of Superman special is the ground floor to the most exciting action imaginable in 2025. With the Superman movie coming out this summer, it makes sense to have a big storyline for the Man of Steel in the comic books, so it looks like it's going to be an exciting summer for Superman fans like myself. Billy Hogan again. My second pick is on the top of the very next page, page 3, with Superman number 25, written by Joshua Williamson, with art by Dan Mora, Eddie Barrows, and Eber Ferreira. Cover by Dan Mora, and that's the cover I'll be getting, with variant covers by Rafael Grassetti, Guillaume March, Jeff DeCall, and Brad Walker. A 1 in 25 variant cover is done by Dave Johnson, and a 1 in 50 variant cover by Laura Braga, and a 1 in 100 variant cover by Fico Alcio, and an April Fool's variant cover by Dan Hipp, and a foil variant cover by Dan Mora, and a blank sketch cover. The main cover price is $5.99 for 48 pages, and the cardstock variant covers are $6.99, and this issue is scheduled to go on sale April 23rd. Superman and Superwoman are still reeling from their epic battles against Doomsday and Time Trapper, but a bigger problem just appeared. Lex is back. Lex's memory was erased during the House of Brainiac arc, but now Superman's greatest enemy has returned with a twist, and he's ready for a fight to control Supercorp and Metropolis. Is this the end of Supercorp? Prepare for a shocking oversized issue that celebrates the last 2 years of Superman, connects to the summer of Superman, and sets up a brand new storyline. Now, we all had to know that Lex's memory was going to come back at some point, and what better time than a very special summer of Superman? Billy Hogan again. My next pick is on the very next page, page 4, with Action Comics number 1085, written by G. Willow Wilson, art by Gavin Goodry, and main cover by Brad Walker, which is the one I'll be getting. Variant covers are by David Parator and Cully Hamner, with a 1 in 25 variant cover by Danny Earls. The cover price of the regular edition is $4.99 for 32 pages, and the cardstock variant covers are $5.99, and this issue is scheduled to go on sale April 9th. Superman Superstars concludes with an unforgettable two-part story written by Poison Ivy's G. Willow Wilson and drawn by fan favorite artist Gavin Goodry, who drew Superman 78. Knowing he needs a break from the expectations and pressures of Metropolis, Lois sends Clark to the Arctic to investigate a new technology that promises to halt global warming. But when Clark arrives, he discovers that the scientific outpost has been plagued by a villain hoping to melt humanity's hopes for survival. Sounds like a job for Superman. I enjoyed the art of Gavin Goodry on the miniseries Superman 78, so I'm looking forward to seeing his art in this issue, and the continuing storyline of Lois serving as managing editor of the Daily Planet also is a great storyline. Billy Hogan again. My next pick is at the bottom of page 4 with Absolute Superman number 6, written by Jason Aaron, with art by Carmen de Giandemonico. The main cover is by Rafa Sandoval, which is one I'll be getting. Variant covers are by Derek Chu and Puppeteer Lee, with a 1 in 25 variant cover by Rod Reese and a 1 in 50 variant cover by Derek Chu. The cover price of the main edition is $4.99 for 32 pages, and the cardstock variant covers are $5.99, and this issue is scheduled to go on sale April 2nd. Something strange happened in the American heartland several years ago, something that brought fear and darkness to a small Kansas town and forever changed the lives of one kindly couple. Welcome to Smallville. I've received the first 3 issues of this series, and I'm enjoying this new version of Superman, and I'm looking forward to seeing the introduction of the Kents in this series. Billy Hogan again. My next pick is at the bottom of the next page, page 5, with Superman, The Last Days of Lex Luthor, number 3, the final issue of this miniseries, written by Mark Waid with art and main cover by Brian Hitch, and this is the one I'll be getting. Variant covers are done by Chris Samney and Declan Shalvey. The cover price is $6.99 for 48 pages with the regular edition, and the cardstock variant covers are $4.99. It seems unusual that the cover price of the regular edition is more expensive than the cardstock variant covers, but anyway, I enjoy the art of Brian Hitch. He has a great realistic style, so I'm getting the regular edition. This issue is going on sale on April 23rd. Lex is on death's door as a new threat emerges to finally take down the Man of Steel. Will Superman be able to face down this danger and save Lex, or will this be the world's greatest hero's biggest failure? Don't miss this pulse-pounding conclusion. I'll be glad to finally read the conclusion of this miniseries because the first issue was released last year and there was a long break between the first and second issues. But with Brian Hitch's ultra-realistic and detailed style, I wonder if that contributed to the lag between issues 1 and 2. But regardless, I won't complain. It's been a great story with a fantastic premise, and I'm looking forward to reading the conclusion. This story shows you what type of character Superman has when he's willing to bend over backwards to try to save the life of his greatest enemy.
Next up on page 11 of the DC Connect is Absolute Flash number 2. Now, I'm a little lukewarm on the whole Absolute Universe. I've already bailed out of Absolute Batman, Absolute Wonder Woman. I'm hanging on to Absolute Superman. I'm trying out all these other ones. What got me to the second issue of Absolute Flash is we're going to get the Rogues Gallery. It looks like we've got a new version of Captain Cold, Ragdoll, I think, maybe, and Captain Boomerang. Not sure who else we've got in the mix, but I like the Rogues Gallery for the Flash. This looks pretty interesting. So it'll at least get me to a second issue here. I'm not going to do a second issue on Absolute Martian Manhunter. The art just doesn't look appealing to me. Maybe I'll change my mind on that. Maybe I won't. But with all these things being $4.99, I'm trying to be a bit more selective on this. But again, a new version of the Rogues Gallery could be a lot of fun. So, once again, that's Absolute Flash number 2 on page 11 of the DC Connect.
Billy Hogan again. My next DC pick is on page 12 with Batman Superman, World's Finest, number 38. Written by Mark Waid and art by Clayton Henry. The main cover is by Dan Mora, which is the one I'll be getting. Variant covers are by Gavin Goodry and Adrian Gutierrez. And a 1 in 25 variant cover by Elizabeth Torque. And an April Fool's variant cover by Brandt and Stein. The cover price of the regular edition is $3.99 for 32 pages. And the cardstock variant covers are $4.99, and this issue is scheduled to go on sale April 16th. We Are Yesterday, Part 1 of 6. The sinister psychic powers of the devious Gorilla Grodd have the Man of Steel and the Dark Knight in their sights, but all is not as it seems to be. There's something strange going on here, some monkey business that the world's finest can't quite put a finger on. It's almost as if this Gorilla Grodd has knowledge of the future? Mark Waid never disappoints in any issue of this series. Plus, we get to see Gorilla Grodd again. I remember back in the 1960s when DC used to have a lot of stories and covers involving gorillas. In fact, the editors of DC Comics back in the 60s came to believe that when they put gorillas on the cover, it increased sales. Now, I don't know if that was really true or not, but it did give us a lot of cool gorilla characters and stories back then, and I'm looking forward to reading this issue. Billy Hogan again. My next pick is on the top of the very next page, number 13, with Batman Superman, World's Finest 2025 Annual. Written by Mark Waid, Christopher Cantwell, and Morgan Hampton, with art by Dan McDade and Clayton Henry. The main cover is by Dan Mora, which is the one I'll be getting, with variant covers by Clayton Henry and Salvador LaRocca, and a 1 in 25 variant cover by Laura Braga. And this issue is $5.99 for 48 pages and is scheduled to go on sale April 30th. We Are Yesterday, Part 3 of 6. The secret origin of the single most unholy union in DCU history is at last revealed. The Legion of Doom has set in motion a scheme to lay waste to not only the world's finest team, but to the present-day Justice League Unlimited, How is this possible? All will be revealed in this special World's Finest Annual by Mark Waid, Christopher Cantwell, and Dan McDade. Plus, meet Jon Stewart, the newest ring slinger of Sector 2814, and this definitive World's Finest telling of Jon Stewart's Lantern origin. Any story involving the Legion of Doom is going to be a great one because they are such a challenge for the DC heroes. And I'm curious about the Jon Stewart origin as Green Lantern, since he's been a Green Lantern since the 1970s. Is this a flashback, or is this kind of presenting a new spin on his origin? Regardless, since Mark Waid is involved in writing it, it's looking like this is going to be a great issue to read.
This is Jason with my first pick in the DC Connect catalog. On page 40, it's More Fun Comics number 73 facsimile edition. It says, "The astounding Aquaman and the gallant Green Arrow and Speedy make their dynamic DC debut among other fun tales of more adventure, More Fun Comics." So More Fun Comics was one of the original, if not the original, line for DC Comics. It was New Fun Comics, I believe, back in 1935, and then it became More Fun Comics several issues in. But this series is probably most noted for having Dr. Fate as well as the Spectre in the main, you know, stories that they had. We also had Superboy, who started out in the Golden Age, which was, of course, Clark Kent, as this, if he had powers when he was young, stories about him. So that was also very interesting. I think this would be a fun one to have because there's other stories in it as well. With Dr. Fate, I think I had the, I believe I had two, I'm not sure if it's one or two of the DC archives, but I had that series, and same thing with the Spectre. And those, it was a DC archives Spectre edition, but it covered all of the More Fun appearances, or most of them. I don't think it covered actually all of the Golden Age appearances, but it had a lot. So very interesting stories. They're certainly Golden Age, but this particular issue, they're reprinting it because it has the first appearance of Aquaman and the first appearance of Green Arrow, and of course Speedy too. So I'm looking forward to checking this out and seeing what their first appearances were like, and, you know, seeing how that goes. But these are fun to pick up, these facsimile editions. So we're going to see, and I'm not sure exactly what year this was, but we're going to see lots of, you know, ads, time, you know, period ads, as well as see some pretty cool adventures of some pretty classic heroes really here. So this is an anthology. So there's Aquaman, Green Arrow, and Speedy, of course. You have Dr. Fate, you have Spectre, and I believe Johnny Quick, and probably one or two other stories in it. So it's quite a big book. It's 68 pages for $5.99.
Billy Hogan again. My final DC pick is on page 40 with More Fun Comics number 73 facsimile edition. And I'll be getting the main cover by Howard Sherman, which is a reproduction of the original cover, because I always love to get the original cover of these facsimile editions. Now, since Jason Z picked this issue before I did, I'll spare having to have you listen to me reread this solicit. I'll just say that I love these facsimile editions of older issues, especially going back to the Golden Age, because those are definitely beyond my price range as far as getting original copies. According to Mike's Amazing World of DC Comics, this issue was the November 1941 issue published late in September of that year. And the reason I'm going to get this issue is because it contains the first appearance of not only Aquaman, but Green Arrow and Speedy. And I'm looking forward also to reading stories involving these other Golden Age heroes, Dr. Fate, Radio Squad, Johnny Quick, Clip Carson, and the Spectre. Now, the Spectre, if you may not know, was a co-creation of Superman co-creator and original writer Jerry Siegel, who created the character along with the original artist Bernard Bailey. And the Spectre probably was more of a horror-type character back then than he even is now, because of some of the things that he would do to criminals back in the Golden Age, and a few of the Spectre stories I've read from that era in various DC reprints. So if you enjoy reading a sample of Golden Age comic books, especially from DC, I would recommend getting this issue, More Fun Comics number 73, facsimile edition.
This is Jason with my next pick in the DC Connect catalog. On page 48, it's DC Finest Batman, The Killing Joke, and Other Stories. This particular DC Finest looks like it continues right after the Batman Year 1 and Year 2, which was the first DC Finest Batman edition that they did. So that one's starting around the time of the Crisis and goes into the early years of the reboot of Batman, I guess you could say, or the post-Crisis, really, Batman. This one says, the Caped Crusader continues to battle crime in Gotham in the late 1980s, this time squaring off against villains such as Two-Face, the Ratcatcher, the KG Beast, and Batman issues 413 through 422, and Detective Comics issues 580 through 589. This volume also contains two celebrated graphic novels, Batman, Son of the Demon, number 1, and Batman, The Killing Joke, number 1. Comics masterpiece that explored the complex dynamic between Batman and his arch nemesis, the Joker. And of course, Son of the Demon is dealing with Ra's al Ghul. So these are very classic stories. This is the time which I think I enjoyed Batman the most, or when I really got into Batman. So I'm hoping to be able to pick these up and read them pretty much in publication order, starting with the first DC Finest Batman and then continuing on here. So I'm hoping that they'll continue to print these in order moving up into the 90s, and I'm hoping that these stories will hold up from what I remember, but this is the kind of stories that got me into being a Batman fan, and I look forward to catching these great 1980s stories. Both Alan Moore, looks like Mike Barr, Jim Starlin, tons of writers here, highly recommended, best of the best type of writers. So, and not to mention art by Jim Aparo. He's probably my favorite Batman artist, so I look forward to checking this book out when it comes, May 2025, 608 pages for $39.99. This is Jason with my next pick in the DC Connect catalog. On page 52, it's Dr. Fate by J.M. DeMatteis. It says, in the late 1980s, writer J.M. DeMatteis reinvigorated the classic JSA hero, Dr. Fate, by introducing not one, but two new characters who would combine powers to become the latest incarnation of Dr. Fate. This complete collection of DeMatteis' run collects the original 1987 miniseries, illustrated by Keith Giffen, plus the ongoing series, drawn by Sean McManus. Collects Dr. Fate, 1987, issues 1 through 4, and Dr. Fate, volume 2, issues 1 through 24, and Dr. Fate, annual 1. So this is a compendium, even though they're no longer using the word compendium. And I'm not sure why, but it's a huge book, 776 pages, and it has that compendium price of $59.99. So this was a reinvigoration of the Dr. Fate character, who was largely left unused since the Golden Age, where his run was most popular in the More Fun Comics series, his Golden Age. That's where he got his start there, but also, of course, with the JSA series as well, All-Star Comics. But I'm looking forward to checking this out. Dr. Fate is one of those very interesting characters. They've reinvented and reinvigorated him over the years, but this is definitely one of the better runs, I think, for the character. And you essentially get all of those issues in one. So it's about 30 issues worth, really, in one book. So I look forward to checking this out. If you are a Dr. Fate fan, definitely pick this one up.
Hey, this is James here with my first pick in the DC Connect. And just so you know, I'm a little pressed for time this month, so I'm going to have fewer clips than I normally have, but I've just been really busy with work and getting things prepared for a trip, but I made some time to record a few clips. The things that I'm looking at first up in DC is way in the back half. I'm looking at the collected editions on page 54. By the way, at the front of the previews, or the DC, not previews, but DC Connect, they do have the Summer of Superman, and I'm a big fan of the Superman character, so I'm probably picking up some of those books for sure. But they had some interesting things over on page 54. First up, we had, you know, Preacher Absolute. I'm definitely going to be picking that up. I love Preacher. I have it in these small hardcovers, so I've been picking up the Absolute 2025 editions, which are reprints, as they've come up for a republishing. When it says 2025 edition, it came out before. So I'm definitely picking that up. But the one that really caught my eye is the Red Lanterns, the New 52 Omnibus. It is written by Peter Milligan, Charles Soule, and more, and art by Ed Benes, Miguel Sepulveda, Alessandro Vitti, Jim Calafiore, and more. Okay, by the way, I do love the cover. I like the Red Lanterns. I like pretty much the Green Lanterns, Green Lantern Corps. I like all these lanterns battling. I like the emotional spectrum. I like all that stuff. So I'm a big fan of the, I guess I'll say Red Lanterns in this case. And what it says in here, it's a hardcover. It is $125 for 1,456 pages. I'll get a discount through Deep Discount Comics. So honestly, page count, these are cheaper than comics, I think. I'm not going to promise that, but you're getting 1,456 pages, and it's in hardcover format, and I'm going to pick it up for about 50% off, so $62.50 for 1,400 pages. It comes out to where it's almost the cost of comics, maybe a little bit cheaper than comics, and it's in a nice format. I like the omnibus format because they usually give you a prologue where someone writes in and tells you about their thoughts, what the direction they're taking, whoever. They usually have some back matter sometimes with some special, including all the covers or showing some sketchwork or whatever they decide to put in there. It's really kind of a cool format. And it's also bigger than a comic, so it's easier to read. Okay, so it says writers Peter Milligan and Charles Soule are joined by a core of writers and artists to spin the rage-filled epic of the Red Lanterns New 52 debut and Red Lanterns the New 52 Omnibus. It collects Green Lantern 23, 23.1, 24, 28, Green Lantern Corps 24, Green Lantern New Guardians 24, Green Lantern Annual number 2, Infinity Man and Forever People 5 through 6, Red Lanterns number 1 through 40, so it's the entire run of Red Lanterns, Red Lanterns Annual number 1, Red Lanterns Futures End number 1, Stormwatch number 9, and Supergirl 26 through 33. Now, what DC and also Marvel tend to do, not always, but they tend to do, is they collect the material in what they call, it's mapped for a reading order. So as you're flipping through and reading it, it should be in the order that you should be reading all these books. So there's not just a 1 through 40 Red Lanterns, and then you got to flip to the back to get the interim stories that connect. Oh, I got to flip over here, I got to flip over here to piece together the story. They build it the way that you're supposed to read the story, which is kind of cool, and I do like that. It's actually something that they should do in Marvel Unlimited and DC Infinite Ultra, but they don't do. If there's a crossover issue, at least last time I used them, they don't necessarily stop your reading and take you here. It just goes to the next issue. So I do like that about the Omnibus, that they do that. I'm going to be picking this up. I'm probably going to be picking up the Preacher Absolute too, but I wanted to definitely give a call out on that Red Lanterns Omnibus because I'm such a fan of the Red Lanterns and Green Lanterns and Orange Lanterns and Yellow Lanterns. And you pick a lantern, I just like that stuff. I think it's fun. I have fun with that, and I have fun with Superman. More oftentimes than not, lanterns are kind of my go-to. All right, on to my next pick.
This is Jason with my last pick in the DC Connect catalog on page 55. It's the Spectre, The Wrath of the Spectre Omnibus, 2025 edition. So this is a reprint of an omnibus that came out, I believe, 2019. I'm not 100% sure exactly when it came out. But it says, in this omnibus, witness former cop Jim Corrigan dish out ghoulish punishments across the DC universe. Collect stories from Showcase 1661 in issue 64. The Brave and the Bold issues 72, 75, 116, 180, and 199. The Spectre issues 1 through 10. Wrath of the Spectre 4. Adventure Comics 431 through 440. DC Comics Presents 29. And Ghosts issues 97 through 99. So this has some wonderful writers. Michael Fleischer, Gardner Fox, Neil Adams, including art by Jim Aparo, Neil Adams, Murphy Anderson. I mean, it goes on and on. So this is like a Silver Age and a Bronze Age collection. I did pick this up a while back because I'm a big Spectre fan, specifically Jim Corrigan, the original Spectre. So I have his original, or his DC Comics Archives edition, which has a lot of his Golden Age, not all of them, but many of his Golden Age appearances from More Fun Comics. But he's a very interesting character, and I liked seeing him interacting with different superheroes. Obviously, he was one of the original members of the JSA. I did also like one of my favorite stories of the Spectre in it is in DC Comics Presents 29, where Spectre has to intervene and help set Superman straight on a better path. And he ends up hearing from something called the Voice, which is just another word for God that the Spectre serves. So I thought that was a very interesting story that it kind of showed, despite all the powers of Superman, that he still, you know, still needs guidance and still needs help to be able to, somebody to remind him when he's on the wrong path, you know. So anyway, these are really good stories. I definitely recommend this if you are a Spectre fan, but I actually picked this one up, so I have the original copy, but it sold out pretty quickly, and I think it goes for quite a bit on the secondary market, but I definitely recommend this. It's classic DC, Silver Age and Bronze Age DC. Some really good stuff here, so definitely pick this one up if you're a Spectre fan.
Billy Hogan again. My next pick comes from the Image Comics section of previews on page 176 with Geiger number 13. Written by Jeff Johns, with art and main cover by Gary Franks and Brad Anderson. Variant covers are done by Joe Prado and Wes Zoba, who do one. Sean Von Gorman does another. The explosive second year of the hit series begins here. Geiger comes face to face with the unstoppable power of Ashley Arden, the glowing woman. Can he learn to control his abilities as she has? Or will his growing power doom him and everyone he holds dear? Meanwhile, the custodian returns alive and more dangerous than ever. But what's his connection to Junkyard Joe, and why is he back now? Secrets unravel and the stakes have never been higher. Scheduled to be in shops on April 9th for the cover price of $3.99. Jeff Johns, Gary Frank, and Brad Anderson have created a very interesting science fiction nuclear apocalyptic world that they are continuing to develop. This glowing woman looks like she'll be a great character. And anything to do with Junkyard Joe, I enjoy, because after Geiger, Junkyard Joe is my favorite character of this post-apocalyptic world.
Next up on page 58 of the Image catalog is Family Force 5, Book 1. Now, this is an original graphic novel trade paperback. Trim size is 6x9. Not crazy about that, but page count here is 248 pages. Price tag $16.99, so a little expensive, but not too bad. This thing looks like it's right up my alley. The basic concept here is you've got a Super Sentai team. I don't know if they've got the big robot or not, so maybe it's just a Sentai team. Either way, it looks very much in that genre. And this team of, I guess it was Moon Troopers, fought off the big kaijus and stuff, and then it got to where the attacks spread from Japan elsewhere, so the team kind of broke up and established new teams in various areas. It looks like Paris, Southern California, unsurprisingly, etc., and how it became kind of a family business to protect the world and whatnot. And this is very much in line with so many openings from so many Power Rangers seasons where thousands of years ago this happened and the descendants of them rise up today to fight the good fight, etc., etc. Art looks pretty good. It's manga-ish, but not, you know, heavy manga and stuff. It's got some nice coloring. So I'm looking forward to this. It should be a lot of fun. And I'm curious, again, this is book one. That implies more books coming. So I'm curious, kind of, do we get a good solid end at the end of this? You know, after 248 pages, I would certainly hope so. I expect it to be kind of, again, end of book one with a teaser for what may come next. So the whole family Super Sentai aspect and stuff looks like a lot of fun to me. So I'm going to check this out. And really, for the number of pages we're getting for the $16.99 and stuff, seems like a pretty good deal. So once again, that's Family Force 5, Book 1, original graphic novel trade paperback on page 58 of the Image catalog.
This is Jason with my first and only pick in the Marvel Previews catalog on page 2. It is Godzilla vs. Hulk. This is round 2 in a series of 6 one-shots. So I've always enjoyed Incredible Hulk as a character. I definitely Loved watching Godzilla and King Kong movies when I was young. Always look forward to them battling and basically monster against monster. But this one looks like it's going to be a good one. Two longtime characters. Round two versus the Incredible Hulk. General Ross has no tolerance of monsters in any form. With his anti-kaiju task force, the Thunderbolts, he's taken down or imprisoned the biggest and baddest monsters on the planet. Fing Fang Foom, Mothra, Kumonga, even the Hulk. Now all that's left is his biggest hunt of all, Godzilla. But the Thunderbolts' efforts to bring their last monster to heel may just result in the most destructive battle royale to ever rock the earth. It's time to figure out who's really the strongest there is. So I look forward to checking this one out. It is interesting that they just finished up the DC, you know, Godzilla versus the DC characters. And that was a 5 or 6 issue miniseries. And this one is like a series of like 6 one-shots. So battling characters separately. So I do look forward to checking this one out. I'm a big Hulk fan. So I've always wanted to see that matchup. So let's see what he can do. Are they going to team up or actually fight like it looks like in the story? All right. Check this one out, guys.
Hey, this is James here with a pick in the Marvel previews. And the first thing that I was going to call out is on pages 4, where you get the issue and the creatives, and page 5, where you get the actual solicit. So I guess I'm going to say page 5. And I'm going to give you a warning about this one as I record it. Okay, it is Amazing Spider-Man number 1, written by Joe Kelly, Pepe Larraz, and John Romita Jr. on the art. That's an interesting combo. Nothing alike, those two artists. So maybe it's some flashbacks. Who knows? And it says, alive and thwipping. The next era of the Amazing Spider-Man has arrived. Peter is shockingly without a job. That's not too shocking for me. Looking for gainful employment. But his job search is interrupted by a rampaging rhino who is but the tip of a sinister iceberg. What major spider-villain is working behind the scenes, weaponizing other spider-villains, including one who we haven't seen in over 7 years? So I'm curious who that is. Also, what is that goblin-free Norman Osborn up to anyways? So it's 40 pages, $6. Okay, so this is my warning. I have 2 warnings on this. One, this is the intro of the $6 comic. It used to be you get the 40-page oversized first issue and you get the $5 comic and it kind of stunk. And then they went back to $4 an issue. Now at $5 an issue, one issue is $6. It's 40 pages. I'm interested in The Amazing Spider-Man. I left it for a long time. I kind of picked it up when Joe Kelly came back on as a writer, even though it's okay. They were doing those Crimson's creatures from Sidorak, whatever, in the fight with, on that end. But I'm hoping it's in a new direction because it seems like it could be fun. I do not like the $6 price point because $6 is where I'm going to start questioning if I'm going to keep buying single issues. I don't know. We'll see. But the other thing I wanted to warn you about, and this is a bigger warning, you are going to have to pick this up on FOC, especially if you're a pre-orderer like me. When I got last month's order form, when I say last month, I'm recording this August, I think it's 4th at the time of this recording, maybe August 5th. This was on the January order form. So here I'm going to be getting the February order form, and the book will not be on there, even though it's in the catalog being solicited now. This is one of those books, and you would think Amazing Spider-Man number 1 would be a big enough book that they'd say, hey, maybe we want to have this comic on the order form for the month it's being solicited. But no, they're not doing that. It was solicited last month with no preview art, no creative teams, no nothing. And it's just kind of a frustrating thing. The biggest, worst example of this is One World Under Doom, which was an event, and it's still going on right now. The One World Under Doom, which is like 1 of 5 issues, the first issue was not on the December order form. It was not on the January order form. Number 2 was on the January order form. It was a book that was never solicited and never on any order form, non-orderable. I literally had to send an email to Eric over at Cowabunga Comics. Hey man, I'm picking up issues 2 through 5. Can you manually add number 1? It was never on an order form. And that's not his fault. It was never provided by Penguin Random House as orderable. So who knows? Maybe that'll be a very rare comic, or maybe all the shops are picking up on FOC and ordering everything on FOC because of the snafus with the 3 monopolies, soon to be 2 monopolies, maybe, if Diamond goes completely out of business, we'll be down to 2 monopolies. Things, in my opinion, got worse. They did not get better. So on to my next pick.
Hey, I'm Chris Brawley, and I go by Brawlinator on the forums. And my first pick for this February's previews is in the Marvel Preview Supplemental. And it's an interesting take on Old Hornhead. Literally, Charles Soule and Steve McNiven are teaming up once again for a limited series called Daredevil Cold Day in Hell, set to debut in April 2025 with a dark future epic that will take readers into the future where the Marvel Universe is on the brink of collapse, and it features a grizzled, older Matt Murdock. Now, this will be McNiven's first major comics work in nearly a decade, and of course, joining him is no stranger to Hell's Kitchen, Charles Soule, who had a classic run on Daredevil back in 2015, 10 years ago. The solicit reads, years into the future, a powerless Matt Murdock is no longer Daredevil, but he's still the man without fear, doing whatever he can to help those in need in a city broken beyond repair. He'll finally be able to take the fight to where it matters most when something catastrophic happens, causing his powers to miraculously return. With no one by his side, Daredevil has little chance against the evil permeating every corner until Captain America entrusts him with a mission to safeguard the world's only hope. Daredevil Cold Day in Hell by Soule and McNiven, the duo behind Death of Wolverine, have been working on this project for 4 years, so you know it's going to be an epic look at Daredevil and Hell's Kitchen like we've probably never seen before. You can take a look at the art and the solicit for yourself on page 14 of this month's Marvel Previews.
Next up on page 34 of the Marvel Previews is Wolverine and Kitty Pryde number 1. This is a 5-issue miniseries, and it is essentially a sequel or continuation of the Wolverine Kitty Pryde miniseries from, I want to say, the mid-80s? So we're going back a ways. But if you're going to do a sequel to one of these stories by Chris Claremont and stuff, who better to have write it than, well, Chris Claremont? So this is going to be one of his first writing things, certainly one of his first miniseries in, geez, I don't know how long. So definitely looking forward to that. This is a great property for him to go revisit. I think it was a great era of both Wolverine and Kitty Pryde, and really kind of established Wolverine as that potential mentor figure that he has since become for so many other mutants down the line. Now, the art here is from a Damian Corsaro, maybe? I'm probably mispronouncing that name. And I'm a little disappointed that all the images we get here are cover images by other artists. So I'm not entirely sure what this artist has done before. They don't list any credit for him, and they don't give any art samples, so that's a little annoying, but I don't think they would put a bad artist on a book by Chris Claremont. That just seems foolish. So I'm looking forward to this. It's a $3.99 cover price. Given Marvel these days, that was not a guarantee. There's a note that there are multiple characters' first appearances in this issue, so maybe we'll get some new characters that become key players in the X-Men franchise. Either way, 5-issue miniseries by Claremont with Wolverine and Kitty Pryde seems hard to go wrong in my opinion, so I'm certainly going to check it out. Think you should too. Once again, that's Wolverine and Kitty Pryde number 1 on page 34 of the Marvel Previews.
Hey, this is James here with a pick in the back half of the Marvel Previews, and there are several new omnibus being solicited. I'm going to be picking up quite a few of these from my new library, installing the shelves right now, but there is one that caught my eye, and we had a book club on this material, and I think most of us enjoyed it. Although we all said, and I think it was Brawlinator or Chris Myers, one of the two, and I think it was Brawlinator, he said the colors in those comics were pretty garish, so I'm hoping they do some recoloring on these damn comics, because they were definitely made for newsprint comics. So if you got any kind of a reprint, the colors were something left to be desired. Okay, on page, let's see, I don't have a page number right now. It looks like 98 on the PDF, and I don't know if sometimes that, 96 in the catalog, even though it's 98 in the PDF. On page 96, it's the NAMM, 1966 through 1969, omnibus hardcover. Michael Golden cover, that is an iconic cover of issue number 1. There is a direct market cover by Romita Sr. and Friends, which shows like the Marvel characters in Vietnam. I'm going to tell you right now, normally I like direct market covers because, ooh, they're more exclusive, give or take. I'm getting the regular market, the traditional NAM cover, because that's a beautiful cover. It is awesome. That's the one I'm getting. And it is written by Doug Murray, penciled by Michael Golden, Wayne Van Sant, John Severin, Sam Glanzman, and Pepe Moreno. Now, one thing I'll tell you about Michael Golden's art, because we did that in the book club. His art is not what I would call photorealistic. It has a more cartooned feel to it, and yet it fits the material perfectly of the Vietnam War. It's hard to explain that until you see it. It's not ultra realistic, but it works. It fits the material. It's a very specific style, and it is just fantastic. If you are a fan of Medal of Honor, Call of Duty, any of the Vietnam War shows that have been out there, you want to read this stuff because it was written by a guy who was in Vietnam. And it's written from the perspective at times of a guy who is reporting on the war and things that you're seeing happening with a war with no end in sight and a war that I wouldn't even say it started off as a popular war. It kind of grew and grew and grew through different presidential administrations and then became very unpopular with a mandated draft. That was the last time we really saw the draft being implemented where people were taken and sent off to a war, whether they wanted to be there or not. And that's even addressed in later issues in the book as you see back home what's going on and popular opinion. Vietnam War is one of my favorite time periods for just seeing chaos in the world and seeing the change of warfare from battlefield tactics of World War II, where it's rolling plains of Europe and North Africa and tanks and planes and this and that, to where you're dealing with what we see more so today, a test of wills and guerrilla warfare and a populace where the opposition is embedded and they don't necessarily want your foreign presence. And so the Republic of Vietnam had their own troops, yet we ended up doing most of the fighting. Were they really popular or were we trying to install our will? I'm not saying this is a political thing. These are things that kind of happen and you see in this comic. It is fantastic material. The other thing that I'll tell you about the NAM comic, it goes for issues. Every single issue is a month. I believe it was a month in Vietnam. So I believe the series, and I know I'm going to get this wrong, went for like 89 issues, or I think it was 84, 89 issues, something like that. And that was the length of the Vietnam War. So your last one is going to be the Americans fleeing the war, leaving, you know, that going to the embassy and the flight of the helicopter, leaving at that time. This book, this is the first volume, and I hope there will be a second volume. It's collecting the NAM 1986, number 1 through 45, and material from Savage Tales 1995, number 1 and 4, because there were some Savage Tales, big black and white magazines that did the NAM. And really, really good stuff. I cannot recommend this enough. With this coming out, who knows? Maybe a book club will revisit, maybe a round two. I don't know. But this is 1,120 pages, 1,120 pages for $125. And I personally say, if you're a fan of war comics, you have to buy this. You have to pick this up. You have to have access to this. This stuff has been out of print. It is not available. It's not on Marvel Unlimited. Will it be one day now that this is coming out? Maybe. I don't know. Seems like all they do is superhero stuff on there. Like they don't want the other stuff. They don't want the old war and horror books for whatever reason. They want it to be for kids. The kid market that doesn't exist. But I'm picking this up. I know other people pick this up. Pick it up if you're a fan of Vietnam, if you're a fan of war comics. And let me know if you pick it up on the Slack. On to my next pick.
In the mid-1980s, Marvel Comics took a bold step by introducing The NAM, a series that presented a realistic depiction of the Vietnam War, a conflict whose painful legacy was still being experienced a decade after the war ended. Crafted by writer Doug Murray and overseen by editor Larry Hama, this monthly comic featured the artistic talents of Michael Golden, John Severin, Sam Glanzman, and several other notable contributors. The Vietnam War-focused narrative gained a devoted fan base and critical acclaim for its authentic portrayal. First released in December 1986, it marked the beginning of an ambitious 8-year, 84-issue limited series that aimed to chronicle the Vietnam War month by month. And this is not your G.I. Joe yearbook style. This is Michael Golden, and his illustrations of military equipment and environments are grounded in reality, but the characters almost have cartoony designs. The narrative structure of the novel was designed to reflect the passage of time, so each issue represented a month in the Vietnam War. This approach allowed for a surprisingly deep exploration of the characters' experiences and evolving nature of the conflict. I remember this made a huge impact on me at the time, and I first discovered it through Marvel's second volume of the black and white magazine Savage Tales. Those stories were called Fifth to the First, and they were also done by Doug Murray and Michael Golden. From there, I ended up getting issue number one of the NOM ongoing comic and loved it. It's a fantastic series. It still holds up today. We actually did a book club recently on the first 12 issues of it, and I was very excited when this omnibus was announced because, frankly, I never thought they would collect it. It looks like this first volume collects the NOM numbers 1 through 45, along with material from Savage Tales number 1 and number 4, which will be those fifth to the first stories that I read that I mentioned earlier. This omnibus is going to get my highest recommendation. It's the NOM 1966 to 1969 omnibus. I'm assuming volume 1. Hopefully there will be a volume 2 so they can collect it all. The first volume comes this August.
What if you knew, beyond a shadow of a doubt, what was going to be solicited next month? What would you order? There's no easy answer, since we don't get next month's Marvel previews today.
I was hoping we were past this point, but apparently we do need another Marvel Early Edition segment. Now, if you look at the Marvel checklist on page 135 of the Marvel previews, you'll see there are a couple of things that are going to be on the order form that aren't here in the catalog. And it seems a little weird, really, because some of these don't strike me as minor little things, but things you would want to do a good promotional push for, even if you've got to do it early because they need a little more time for variant foil covers, whatever. The things that you may miss if you don't catch them on the order form: Fantastic Four Fanfare number 1, Star Wars number 1, Fantastic Four Facsimile Edition number 5, Spider-Verse vs. Venom-Verse number 1, and Godzilla vs. X-Men number 1. Now, I don't know what this Fantastic Four Fanfare number 1 is going to be, because, well, they don't tell us. And we can pretty much guess exactly what that Fantastic Four number 5 facsimile edition is going to be, because it'll be a facsimile edition of Fantastic Four number 5. But to not have in the catalog Star Wars number 1, Spider-Verse vs. Venom-Verse number 1, and Godzilla vs. X-Men number 1 blows my mind. I just don't get why they're not putting those in here early, even if they're not going to come out until March. If they've got to be on the order form, they've got to be in the catalog. That's all there is to it. So, as I've been recommending the last many, many months, always check out that Marvel checklist. Always go through that order form and see what's on the Marvel portion of the order form that's not in the Marvel previews, because otherwise you may miss out on some big stuff. So, once again, that's the Marvel Early Edition on page 135 of the Marvel Previews.
Billy Hogan again. My next pick is on page 68 of Previews from Boom Studios with Mouse Guard Dawn of the Black Axe number 2 of a 3-issue miniseries written by David Peterson. The art and main cover is by Gabriel Rodriguez, and the variant cover is by David Peterson. Now, as you can probably tell by my picks, I always like to get the main cover, but I love the art of David Peterson, so because he's not doing the art for this miniseries, I had to pick the variant cover he did for this issue. The origin story of the Black Axe continues. Bardrick, the first wielder of the Axe, continues his campaign against the serpents surrounding the Mouse territories, but even he can't be everywhere at once. The legendary weapon-bearer must serve his duty, but can he truly manage it all on his lonesome? Scheduled to be in shops on April 23rd for the cover price of $4.99. Now, Mouse Guard is a series of stories about a civilization of mice, and they're drawn pretty much realistically, as mice really do appear, except they have intelligence and have developed a civilization, and the Mouse Guard are a group of mice that they're tasked with the job of protecting the various mouse villages from predators. And the Black Axe is a legendary member of the Mouse Guard, I've enjoyed the Mouse Guard stories that I've got all of the hardcover collected editions of the previous stories, but I couldn't wait for the collected edition of this story, so I had to order it in its original serial publication. Another thing to know about Mouse Guard is it's not comic book size, it's about 8x8 format. If you like non-superhero comic books with fantastic art, check out Mouse Guard. It's an all-ages story that both young readers and adults alike can enjoy.
This is Jason with my first pick in the previews catalog on page 107. It's Space Ghost Johnny Quest, Space Quest number 2. It says, following a series of improbable events in the mysterious hangars of Area 51, Johnny Quest and Haji are flung far into the future and face to face with an exasperated space ghost. Taking their place in 1960s Nevada, Jan and Jace find themselves trespassing on the most secret, top secret base in the entire world. Luckily, Dr. Quest is on hand to help them figure out what caused this anomalous temporal displacement, and more importantly, how they might reverse it. But that's only if they can stay one step ahead of the military, who have a lot of questions of their own. So it looks like this continues the story of the Space Ghost and Johnny Quest. And so it looks like, according to this solicit, that Johnny Quest is going back to the future again. And looks like some of the Space Ghost characters are coming to the past. So I'm looking forward to how they're going to piece this together. Two great cartoon franchises. And I'm hoping that Joe Casey will continue to do well with the series. But I'm looking forward to seeing how he's going to pull this story out. And I look forward to seeing them kind of switching places. And it's almost like Johnny Quest and Haji are now taking the place of the twins who are Space Ghosts' like companions. So I'm looking forward to check this out. The art is really good. I really enjoyed it from the first Johnny Quest story arc that they did. So I look forward to checking this out. If you're a Hanna-Barbera fan, Space Ghost fan, or Johnny Quest fan, definitely pick this one up and give it a look. This is Jason, and my next pick in the previews catalog is on page 121. It's The Green Hornet, Miss Fury, number 4. It says, with Miss Fury missing in action and the case of the Silver Shrike's murder unraveling around them, the Green Hornet and Kato must find their mutual resentments boiling over into a no-holds-barred brawl. Will the two crime-fighting partners come to their senses in time to save the city? Or is this truly the end for one of the most iconic partnerships in comic book history? So this is issue 4 of what I believe is going to be a 5-issue miniseries. But it's a very, very, very fun Silver Age pulp type story with Miss Fury and Green Hornet being pretty much polar opposites. But it's a very interesting story, and I definitely recommend checking this out if you are a pulp fan, Catwoman fan, you know, obviously a Green Hornet and Kato fan. They've done a really good job with this with Alex Segura, and I look forward to seeing this story continuing this month.
Hey, this is James here with a recording in the main previews catalog. And I'm looking for a page number. I'm using these digitally, and they are missing in action. So I don't know where the page numbers are. I don't know. I will say, based on this, I think it's on... I'm looking at the bottom, and I'm not seeing page numbers, so I don't know where they went to. Okay, it's on page 147 in the PDF up in the upper right-hand corner. Actually, 142, it was cut off because the page was too big. It was on automatic zoom, so let me go to page fit. There we go, 142, where I am looking at The Savage Sword of Conan, the original comics omnibus, volume 6. And there's a caveat to this one. There's always a caveat to something I record. I'm going to recommend anybody who did not pick this up from Marvel to pick it up. It's good material. The Savage Sword of Conan, black and white magazines. You've heard me harp on it. You heard other people who are fans of the Conan franchise talk about it. The black and white magazines were better than the color comics. It was the a little more risque, a little more violent version of what we got in the Comics Code Authority color comics. And the art, in my opinion, in black and white, you can see the line work a lot better. I like black and white art better than color art half the time. So every now and then some color helps, but honestly, it does kind of hide the line work. And when you're able to see something pure and pristine, I tend to appreciate it a little bit more. Especially today, a lot of color artists, they take a little bit of liberty and actually add in strokes and marks that aren't there in the original pencils. So I've always been a fan of the black and white. But here we are looking at this. I have this in the Marvel edition. I have pre-ordered, I think it was volumes 9 and 10 of the Savage Sword of Conan reprints from Titan, because Marvel stopped at volume 8 of the omnibus editions for the Savage Sword of Conan. They completed the color comics. The license came up. They passed it. They didn't bid high enough, or it was passed off. Titan picked it up. Now, the caveat on this is, at the time of my recording this, February 5th, there's a few publishers that have not found a distribution backup plan if Diamond goes completely defunct. Right now, Diamond Comics Distributors is in bankruptcy. Maybe they'll pull out. Hope they do. If they don't, I don't know where Titan will be. They have announced no plans. Nobody has picked them up. I would say, and this is just me saying, not knowing, for both Dynamite and Titan, who don't have distribution right now that I know of, it's more likely you'll see an omnibus get picked up by a book publisher. Titan may be able to go through Simon & Schuster. They may be able to go through Penguin Random House just for the books. Penguin Random House, all of the companies outside Lunar, because that's kind of what they did before, they do the floppies as like a courtesy for the book distribution. They don't want floppy comics. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of hassle for what they want, which is books. They got the distribution for the comics, and they are doing it as an accommodation because they know that Marvel and Boom, who they purchased outright, and Dark Horse, when they're finished with these singles, they have a trade paperback, or they have a hardcover that they're able to stick on a shelf or send to Amazon. These floppies, they send them out to these stores, but that's incidental. It's a drop in the bucket. So I think if you pre-order this book, my guess is it will see the light of day, and Eric, Deep Discount Comics, whatever company you use, maybe whatever comic shop, should be able to obtain this, and it may not be through Titan through Diamond. It may be Titan stamp on it through Simon & Schuster, or through a PRH, or whatever publishers out there. I don't know all of them. So I think this is a little safer than if you were buying a floppy right now. And like I said, Diamond could pull out of this, and I hope they do. But this is great material. If you didn't pick up this material, you got to pick it up. It is fantastic. I will say I've seen the Uncanny Omar do his side-by-side comparison with the Marvel Omnibus, with the Titan Omnibus. It is, in my opinion, and I think in his opinion, equivalent to. You're getting the same quality. The little tag changes, but they make it look similar enough to where it's not even going to mess up your spine on the bookshelf by buying the Titan editions if you already had the Marvel editions. So my hat's off to Titan. I hope they find distribution if things do go in a bad direction, because I really like them. And I do like Dynamite. And I hope all these small publishers find a home in the worst case scenario. But definitely pick up this Conan stuff. It is fantastic. And on to my next pick.
This is Jason with my next pick in the previews catalog from Titan Comics on page 146. It is Savage Sword of Conan, number 8. It says, witness a death-defying duel from the legendary Liam Sharp, a cave-crawling adventure from Dennis Culver and Chris Burnham, and a dreamlike journey from Fred Kennedy and Marco Rudy. Adding to the excitement are two new Haldorian characters, Breckenridge Elkins and Cormac Fitzjeffrey. So, once again, the Savage Sword of Conan continues to be the best of this new Conan iteration from Titan Comics. We have a little bit longer stories that are able to kind of breathe, but also be told in one or two issues. And I really do like this format a lot. It's really good. The writers are good. The artist is good. The printing has gotten much, much better. And it's a very good price. It's only $6.99 for 64 pages. And they do throw some cover images in there, some pinups and things like that. But for me, it's all about the story, specifically the Conan stories. And they do mix other Robert E. Howard characters, so I look forward to seeing what those are as well. But this one looks like it has three Conan stories in one book, so I'm not sure if one of these will continue on to issue 9 or if they're all three going to wrap up. But definitely check out this series if you're a Conan fan. This is Jason with my next pick in the Diamond Previews catalog on page 148. It's Solomon Kane, The Serpent Ring, issue 2 of 4. It says, Solomon Kane is back. The first Solomon Kane solo series in 15 years. The Sword of Vengeance slashes into his own new series, Solomon Kane, The Serpent Ring. Kane battles from the Barbary Coast across southern Europe to the canals of Venice as a band of rogues forms around him in their quest for the fabled Serpent Ring of Set. So I'm really excited to have another Solomon Kane series. I think he's a character that's very fun and was placed in an interesting time in history, you know, where there was some technology, but there certainly wasn't a lot with single shot pistols and swords being your main weapons. So he always gets into these very interesting adventures, usually fighting against the forces of evil, darkness, and all that. And Patrick Zercher, or Pat Zercher, as they're crediting him in this one, has got a great handle on who the character of Solomon Kane is. I look forward to checking out this mini-series and seeing what direction they're taking Solomon Kane. But I definitely recommend this if you are a Robert E. Howard fan, Conan fan. I think you'll definitely enjoy this series as well.
Billy Hogan again. My next pick is from the Dark Horse section of previews on page 239 with Black Hammer, Spiral City, number 6 of a 7-issue miniseries, written by Jeff Lemire, with art and main cover by Teddy H. Christensen, and a variant cover by Tyler Crook. And the main cover is the one I'll be getting. As Spiral PD begins to investigate the death of fallen hero Lady Lark, Wingman and Concrete Testador take justice into their own hands in this penultimate issue. Black Hammer Spiral City is the next era of the Black Hammer universe, a 7-issue dystopian event series by Jeff Lemire and Teddy Christensen, and it's scheduled to be in shops on May 28th for the cover price of $3.99. Black Hammer continues to be my favorite non-DC or Marvel superhero universe currently being published, and I keep an eye out in every issue of previews to see when the next miniseries is coming out. And I'm anxious to read how Jeff Lemire and Teddy Christensen are going to wrap up the story. Will it be good news for our heroes, or is it going to be a bit of a mixed ending?
Hey, this is James here with my next pick. And this time I'm in the Dark Horse section of the main previews catalog, and I'm looking at a new property, not a new property, a new volume from creator Mark Millar, however you want to say it, Raphael Albuquerque, Huck 2, number 1. Okay, for those of you guys who are not Mark Millar fans, Huck is in the Millerverse or Miller world or whatever you want to call it, the equivalent of Superman. Really, really good guy character, really nice disposition, raised the right way, always does the right thing, very analogous to Superman. He also has a super strength. He's also heroic in nature. He doesn't fly. He kind of jumps around. I'm pretty sure he didn't fly. I read this years ago, so memory's a little bit vague. And it looks like the new one, it's 32 pages, $4.99, so the $5 price point is here to stay. And it says, Huck is an autistic man. Like I said, a very sweet nature, autistic man with extraordinary powers who tries to do one good deed every day. He is a good guy. He is Superman. Now he's back in a sequel where a mysterious man tells him and his mother are the only super people out there, and there are others in hiding just like them. So I am here for it. Huck was always a fun character, and Mark Millar does superheroes very, very well. And what I will say about Huck is he played a part in the big game, which was the Miller world getting together all the properties and putting them all into one shared universe where there was a big event and something happened. And I'm not going to tell you guys what happened because I think everyone should read the big game. It's fantastic. If you're not reading the Miller stuff, you're really missing out. It is fantastic stuff and I'm on board for it. I saw Huck number 2 and it put a smile on my face. When it says he's autistic, not autistic in a very sweet natured way. Not where he's, I would say when I saw him, it didn't look like he needed even special care per se, but people want to be protective of him because he's such a good and nice person. So if that sounds like superheroics and being a good guy trying to do one deed a day, and seeing something good in life. If you like that in your comics, you got to read this comic. And it's written by Mark Miller. I'm on board for it. I think it's going to be fantastic. And you know what? I'm going to call this my last pick because I've been using digital previews and it's kind of hard because I'm flipping through and I can't bookmark things where I want to go. And I don't want to say on to my next pick and then not have a next pick. And I feel like Huck's a good one to stop at. And I'm short for time anyways. But I did want to say I was pressed for time and I did get my clips in. I wanted to say thank you to every single person who does send in their clips. And I wanted to say thank you to John for hosting this and to John for editing this and making it sound good. And at the time of this, I know this is not the place to input this, but I just want to say it. We had the yearly comic spotlight posted and we got some feedback on the Slack channel. And I thought that was really cool. Whenever you guys talk on the preview spotlight, John gets happy and John gets a little bit excited because there's people out there who care. And there's thousands of people who listen to the podcast and then it's like quiet. And that's a little nerve-wracking. You know, you see podcasts go in and out and disappear. And sometimes it's because like you feel like you're speaking into a void. And so Marvin, who's Viking Joker on the Slack channel, I thought it was really cool that after the yearly comic spotlight, he literally, we didn't ask him to do this, but he wrote up like this huge list of all his comments and ideas and things that he heard on the yearly comic spotlight. He was just making comments. He's like, hey, no one asked for my opinion, but blah, 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 blah. And John and I were talking outside of recording and he was enamored. He just loved it. He's like, man, I was so happy that he did that because it tells me one, he's listening and two, he cares. And three, he's engaged. So any type of engagement, any comment you guys put, it just encourages John to keep going and me to keep going to doing this thing that we like to do. We just want to know that you guys are enjoying it. So anytime you guys can send in a preview spotlight clip, it lets John know you care. Anytime you put a comment on the forums or the Slack or just send an email to John, it lets him know you care. And it also tweaks what we do in the future. If you're like, hey, could we do this? Hey, this is an idea I had. Believe it or not, sometimes we do that stuff based on just a comment. So, and it's no charge to you. A lot of podcasts charge and they say, hey, pay us money and then we'll listen to you. John doesn't do that. He listens to you just because he listens to you. And another thing, at the bare minimum, if you're listening to this, send in a 5-star review on Apple Podcast or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast and just let John know he's doing a good job. So that's just from me. Thanks to everyone. And hopefully I have more time to send in more clips in the future. But I'll see you guys on the Slack and on the forums, and you'll hear me on the podcast. Take care. Bye.
My final pick in this month's previews is still in the Dark Horse section on page 243 with Usagi Yojimbo, 10,000 Plums, number 3 of a 5-issue miniseries. Written by Stan Sakai, who also does the art and the main cover, and variant covers are by Jennifer Meyer, Escorza Brothers, and Jennifer Meyer also does the third one. Death returns to the village as the true killer is revealed. Though Usagi, Yukichi, and Jin soon discover the tragedy that set events in motion, the village will see its fortunes change forever and a grieving mother will lose everything for revenge. Another gut-punch ending for Stan Sakai. Scheduled to be in shops on May 14th for the cover price of $4.99. Stan Sakai is an excellent writer, artist, and storyteller, and he knows how to land the ending. So if you enjoy non-superhero comic books and also like to get a peek into different cultures and history, pick up any issue of Usagi Yojimbo and pick up the collected editions of past storylines. Thanks, John, for once again providing this forum so that we can all share our enthusiasm for the comic book medium. And I want to thank all the other contributors who shared their clips of what they'll be reading from this month's previews. And I'm looking forward to listening to all of your picks.
Brawlinator again. I don't know if you've been following Valiant Comics lately, but Alien Books has taken over the publishing line for them and are making big waves, and this month is no different as they've got an all-new jumping-on point for one of the line's central heroes in what they're calling the Valiant Beyond line of comics. This is the Exo Manowar number 1, and it's the mighty Eric of Dakia, aka Exo Man of War, as he traverses a deadly wasteland filled with mutated horrors in search of honor, written by Steve Orlando and illustrated by Guillermo Fajardo. Eric's strength and resilience are put to the test when he comes to the defense of a family under siege from a mysterious gang known as the Earthborn. Eric finds himself aligned with a rebel group, which puts him firmly in the crosshairs of the Earthborn's leader, Typhon. Can Eric survive his journey across the Red Steppe? I hope this is really a good jumping on point for people. I remember when Exo Man of War debuted back in the 90s for the original Valiant launch, and it was just incredible. Sometimes these relaunches and reboots don't always click or find a new audience. You don't know the names of people, the terminology, where the locations. But I think that the guys at Alien Books are doing things right. There's a lot of excitement around this big Valiant Beyond push. And this is the first issue of a new arc, and it's part one of an all-new four-part adventure. So I think it's a four-issue series. And this might be the most significant title in the Valiant Beyond revamp, relaunch, and reboot. Take a look at it yourself. It's on page 260 of this month's previews catalog.
This is Jason with my next pick in the previews catalog on page 304. It's Bill the Boy Wonder, Secret Co-Creator of Batman, New Printing. This is a book that I had heard about after it came out and regret not picking it up. It tells the story of Bill Finger, who was a wonderful comic book writer and an uncredited creator of many stories and characters over his career. And unfortunately, didn't get his due till after he passed. But it says, discover the surprising origins of the legendary Cape Crusader in this entertaining picture book biography for young fans of Batman and superheroes. Batman's biggest secret is not Bruce Wayne. Every Batman story is marked with the words, Batman created by Bob Kane. But that isn't the whole truth. A struggling writer named Bill Finger was involved from the beginning. Bill Finger helped invent Batman from concept to costume to character. He dreamed up Batman's haunting origins and his colorful nemesis. Despite his brilliance, Bill worked in obscurity. It was only after his death that fans went to bat for Bill, calling for acknowledgement that he was co-creator of Batman. Cartoonist and popular Batman artist Ty Templeton brings Mark Tyler Nobleman's exhaustive research to life. Perfect for reluctant readers and those bridging from easy readers to longer narratives, this classic underdog story will inspire all readers to take ownership of and pride in their work. So I really am glad they were able to highlight a lot of Bill Finger's contributions to the comic world. He was a wonderful creator and came up with a lot of the concepts that helped make the Batman character very popular, including his character designs and suggestions like that. So I highly recommend this book if you are a early Batman fan and comic book history fan, because it really highlights a writer who is very unappreciated even today. So definitely pick this one up, guys. This is Jason with another pick from the previews catalog. On page 313, it's Boys of Steel, The Creators of Superman. It says Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, two high school misfits in Depression-era Cleveland, were more like Clark Kent. Meek, mild, and myopic than his secret identity, Superman. In 1934, they created a superhero who was everything they were not. It was four more years before they convinced a publisher to take a chance on their Man of Steel in a new format, the comic book. The author indicates a provocative afterword about the long struggle Jerry and Joe had with DC Comics when the boys realized they had made a mistake in selling all rights to Superman for a mere $130. It's a $7.99 book due out in March 2025. It's supposed to be the first book that just focuses on their story as they met each other and began to work on creating the character of Superman, both obviously visually as well as writing his story and all that. It does go into a little bit about their personal lives living in Cleveland during that time and the pulp magazines that helped to influence their choices, their passions in terms of creating Superman. So it is a sad story in the sense that National Publications was able to get the rights to Superman. And as we know, he has gone on to be a very iconic figure who's made billions of dollars, or at least hundreds of millions of dollars for their company, and carried the DC Comics logo, and pretty much it's a worldwide figure now. So unfortunately, Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster and their family, they were not compensated well, and they essentially lost those rights. They did have some lawsuits and battles that happened later on, in which they tried to make sure they had credit and as well as financial compensation to both themselves and their families going forward. So it's a very good story to know. Unfortunately, this happens a lot with creators, and same thing with in early comics. There was a lot of characters that were created that they were not given, you know, proper compensation, and unfortunately lost the rights to other characters as well. But anyway, this is a great book that tells their story. So if you're curious about the Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster story, this is a good book that has all of it kind of in one. So definitely give this one a check. This is Jason with my next pick in the Diamond Previews catalog on page 324. It's Lost Marvels number 1, Tower of Shadows from Fantagraphic Books. It says, this never-collected horror anthology series featuring stories by Jim Steranko, Neil Adams, Barry Windsor Smith, Stan Lee, John Buscema, and other Silver Age masters. In 1969, with his revolutionary superhero line well-established, Marvel took a chance on the kind of supernatural EC-style anthology series that had been banned since the formation of the Comics Code in the 1950s. Tower of Shadows featured a staggering array of artists and writers, including Neil Adams, Jim Steranko, Barry Windsor Smith, John Buscema, Gene Colan, Wally Wood, Stan Lee, Roy Thomas, John Romita, Johnny Craig, Marie Severin, Jerry Conway, and Bernie Wrightson, to name a few. And of course, these guys are the best of the best here. Freed from the conventions of the superhero adventure, these creators brought their storytelling skills to a more quietly sinister genre, producing atmospheric gems of twisted suspense and sardonic horror. Not only do these 9 issues feature Marvel's best creators working at their peak, but Tower of Shadows is one of the lost, never-collected Marvels. In the first of a new series of lost Marvels, Fantagraphics and Marvel join forces to introduce these pages to a new generation of readers and restore this series to its rightful place in comics history. This gorgeous volume brings every Tower of Shadows story and cover to life in vivid color and features background and analysis by comics journalist Michael Dean. So this is a series that I don't think I've ever read, but I do like the horror anthologies. I love all of the artists and writers that are mentioned in this book. I think this one did become, at issue 9 or 10, it became Creatures on the Loose. So it changed it to a different format, but I definitely want to check this one out. I'm a big fan of these, I guess you'd say, Silver Bronze Age horror anthologies, and I look forward to checking out Marvel's side of it. It is interesting that a lot of these books that are being published by Fantagraphic Comics are old Marvel comics, and it's almost like the non-superhero books, like some war books that I know they've done and some horror books here. So it's very interesting that Marvel is not publishing these books, but they're letting another company do it. So I'm not really sure what's going on with that. But definitely a who's who in terms of comic creators in the 1960s. So definitely give this book a shot.
Brawlinator again. I'm on page 324 of the previews catalog, and I'm looking in the Fantagraphic section. Now, they now have a coveted Marvel Comics license, and they have decided to delve deep into Marvel's back archive for something they're calling Lost Marvels number 1, The Tower of Shadows. Now, back in 1969, with its revolutionary superhero line firmly established, Marvel took a gamble on the type of supernatural EC-style anthology horror series that had been banned since the Comics Code was established in the 50s. Tower of Shadows featured an impressive roster of artists and writers, including Neil Adams, Jim Steranko, Barry Windsor Smith, John Buscema, Gene Colan, Wally Wood, Stan Lee, Roy Thomas, John Romita Sr., Johnny Craig, Marie Severin, Jerry Conway, and Bernie Wrightson. I mean, my goodness, what a lineup. And that's just to mention a few. These creators were freed from the constraints of the superhero adventures, and they applied their storytelling abilities to a more quietly dark genre, resulting in evocative treasures of twisted tension and sarcastic terror. And not only do these 9 issues include Marvel's top creators at their peak, but it's also one of Marvel's lost, uncollected works. That's why it's called Lost Marvels. This is the inaugural installment of their new Lost Marvel series. So Fantagraphics and Marvel are collaborating to bring these stories to a new generation of fans and restore the series to its rightful position in comics history. Knowing Fantagraphics' attention to detail and style, this collection should be stunning, and it'll include plenty of backstory and analysis from comics journalist Michael Dean. You can check it out for yourself on page 324 of this month's previews. Metal Magazine is back, heavier than ever, with a new relaunch bringing the world's greatest illustrated magazine back to the forefront of comics. Now, whether you've been following heavy metal since the 70s, or maybe you're just discovering it for the first time, this is your chance to immerse yourself in over 200 pages of mind-blowing sci-fi, fantasy, and horror with 20 groundbreaking stories from genre-defining creators in what is hopefully going to be the inaugural issue of a bold return to the magazine's roots. I backed this as a Kickstarter project a couple of months ago, and it raised over $750,000 in funding. And the success of the campaign is what has helped this team relaunch the heavy metal brand and is supposed to help fuel future issues and graphic novel collections and even multimedia projects. I'd be okay if they just stuck to putting out a great magazine every month. Now, I loved heavy metal in my teens and 20s. I tried it during the last relaunch and was less than thrilled, but I do have high hopes for this, and I think it will be worth the shot. I know this $15 price tag might make some people think they're going to skip it, but remember, this is over 200 pages of content. That's like 10 comic books, so don't dismiss it altogether. And this also has a bit of an adult flair, or at least mature, so there will probably be blood and some flesh. If that sounds like something you're interested in, check out Heavy Metal Magazine number 1 for yourself over on page 340 of this month's previews. And that's it for me. If you haven't checked out the Slack channel, I suggest you get in there and join the discussions or just lurk around. There's lots of fun content being shared there every day. And you know, given all the sad news about Diamond Comics distributors' woes, I really hope this isn't the last preview spotlight episode. But I do know for sure it won't be the last comic book page episode. Thank you very much to John Mayo, along with James, Kay, Sam, and everyone who makes this podcast possible. Thanks. Now I'll be listening for your picks.
This is Jason with my next pick in the previews catalog. On page 342, it's Eerie or Eyrie magazine number 1 from Hoffman International. It says, the first edition of intelligent and thoughtful horror tales with a moral, told without necessary gore or sexual content, high quality art and content, much like the early Warren publications, and featuring dramatic covers by well-known comics and fantasy artist Mike Hoffman. So this is very interesting. That is kind of the type of horror comics that I like, whether it's magazine or the older stuff, so a comic book format. So I actually look forward to checking this one out. It is a little bit on the higher side, $8.99 for 48 pages, but I think I'm going to give this first issue a shot. And let's see if it's an anthology that has some good quality horror comics without delving into too much of the other stuff. So, because I think you can tell a good horror story without being all super violent and leaving some things to the imagination like the old comics used to. So, definitely recommend this if you are a creepy or eerie horror fan from those magazines from the 60s and 70s. This is Jason again with my next pick in the Diamond Previews catalog on page 383. It's Cruel Kingdom 4 of 4. So this is the last issue in that miniseries, series finale. It says, in EC's final slash through the realms of fatalistic fantasy, step once more through the veil into a shadowy world of demons and dragons, alchemy and anguish, where a fork in the path can bet the difference between untold treasures and certain doom. Leading this month's dark excursions into the weirdest frontiers of wonder, Jay Holtham, Greg Pak, Valerie Berzo, and more. So once again, I'm glad they're this reboot of EC Comics, that they're giving a nod to Sword and Sandals, Sword and Sorcery type of setting. And I'll definitely look forward to picking up this last issue. And they might bring this back out if it did well enough in terms of sales. So I do appreciate them at least trying to step out into this sword and sorcery genre. And so we'll see if this series makes a comeback at some point in the future. But definitely check this one out if you're a sword and sorcery fan. This is Jason with my next pick in the previews catalog on page 412 from Tashin Comics. It's The History of EC Comics Deluxe Hardcover. In 1947, Bill Gaines inherited EC Comics, a new venture founded by his legendary father, M.C. Gaines. Over the next 8 years, Bill Gaines and a who's who of the era, including Al Feldstein, Harvey Kirkman, and Wally Wood, would reinvent the very notion of the comic book with titles like Tales from the Crypt, Crime Suspense Stories, Weird Science, and Mad. Tashin presents the full fascinating story of this fabled company, written and designed by EC expert Greg Geisman. So I have not picked this one up yet. It has a hefty price tag at $200. It is 592 pages. It's like a little bit bigger, I believe, than an omnibus in terms of size. It's pretty good size. And it does have good reviews. I've seen people do some reviews like on YouTube, and it looks like it is pretty much the complete history of that comic book company, and it covers the different eras and different comic titles that were published. So I'm a huge EC Comics fan. I still think to this day it's some of the best writing and art, and definitely the combination of the two that they have ever had in the history of comic books. So I do look forward to checking this one out. Hopefully you can get a good discount from wherever you're ordering it from, but definitely recommend this book if you are an EC Comics fan and a comics history fan. It looks like it's got a lot of detailed information about the great company of EC Comics. This is Jason again with my last pick from the previews catalog on page 413. It's Ultra Ego, number 194. It says, Rascally Roy Thomas celebrates 60 years in comics at Marvel, DC, et al. There's a career-spanning, surprise-filled interview by Alex Grand, still more early 2000s Spider-Man comic strip emails to Roy from Stan Lee, the full secret history of the creation of Wolverine, RT's 1960s fan letters to Julius Schwartz, and his top dozen stories compiled by John Cimino, with amazing art by Buscema, Kane, Adams, Winsor Smith, Colin, Ordway, Buckler, and many others. So this is a very interesting cover, and it comes at a interesting time in the current comic book landscape, in the sense that Roy Thomas had recently come out and proclaimed that he was the co-creator or had come up with the idea for Wolverine. And of course, they have Wolverine on the cover here. And this is during a time when the Deadpool Wolverine movie just recently came out, in which Roy Thomas was credited as a creator there. So I am curious of what this full secret history of the creation of Wolverine is. And Roy Thomas is one of my favorite comic writers. He was very, very good in Conan the Barbarian, bringing him over to Marvel Comics, and he lasted so many issues on that title run. So not to mention the Avengers, pretty much everything he touched, you know, All-Star Squadron, just a wonderful historian and comic book writer. So I look forward to checking this one out. I am a huge fan of his. I do want to hear more about his perspective in the whole Wolverine creation that he claims that he pretty much started that. So, but Alter Ego puts together some great interviews. It's $10.95 for the magazine, but it's kind of a once in a lifetime pickup in terms of Roy Thomas's history. So definitely recommend checking this one out if you are a Roy Thomas fan.
Next up on page M80 of the Diamond Previews from Renegade Games Studio is Power Rangers RPG Through the Shattered Grid Sourcebook Hardcover. Now, I love sourcebooks for comics and superhero-related stuff, or Star Wars, Star Trek, Stargate, certainly for Power Rangers. Man, I wish they'd do one for Super Sentai. And Renegade Games Studio has the license for Power Rangers. They've been doing a ton of RPG stuff. I've picked a lot of them up, normally I've been picking them up straight through Renegade Game Studio, because there'd be a couple that come out at a time or whatever. But when this one came out, again, it's a $45 price tag, but it's a hardcover, and these are usually pretty meaty hardcovers. They've got some heft to them. And I'm like, yeah, it's a little much, but I mean, for a role-playing game these days, it's actually not a bad price. But it was like $20 shipping. And I'm like, yeah, I can't justify the extra $20. And then when I realized it was going to be in previews, and that meant I could get it through my comic shop, which I'm dealing with Eric over at Cowabunga Deep Discount Comics, and that I wouldn't have to pay the $20 shipping because it would just come with my regular shipment of comics, and I'd get it at a discount, I'm like, man, this is a no-brainer. So there's a lot of cool stuff happening in the game section of previews and just of the market these days. I'm not a huge gamer, but I do try to pick up a lot of the source books and modules for superhero-related games, because there's some really interesting takes on superheroes in some of these. So I'm very interested in this, because it's going to give a lot of insight into some of the stuff that happened in the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, Go-Go Power Rangers, and Power Rangers Unlimited comics, and seeing their look at the Shattered Grid storyline and stuff could be a lot of fun. So, once again, that's the Power Rangers RPG Through the Shattered Grid Sourcebook hardcover on page M80 of the Diamond Previews.
This is Jason again, and I just wanted to give a special thanks to John for editing these clips and putting these previews episodes together. He definitely goes through all of our clips, makes us sound better, and helps us out a lot with that. And we appreciate having that voice to be able to put the books out there that we're interested in, so that hopefully people can check out different types of comics. All of our tastes are a little bit different, and we hope that, you know, we're representing some people out there that at least the genres that they may want to check out. So it also comes at a time where the Diamond Previews, we hope to continue that, but there's been a lot of issues with, of course, Diamond declaring bankruptcy and the uncertainty about publishers and all that. I know for me, like going through the previews catalog, I do enjoy trying to find the little niche comics and the small publishers who are may have a small print run, but they do have a chance to have their book listed in previews. So I'm hoping that that will continue at this time. Of course, it's a little bit uncertain, but we'll see how things go as the months continue. And we're definitely hoping for the continual stabilization of the comic book industry and obviously the comic book distribution industry. So we'll see how things go. But thanks again to John for putting this together for us. Have a great time, guys. Talk to you the next time. I look forward to hearing everyone's picks.
I hope everyone found something of interest in the pre-order catalogs this month. I want to thank Jason, Billy, James, and Brawlinator for sending in clips. It would have been a much shorter episode without you guys. The Preview Spotlight has an open submission policy. I want to get more voices and opinions in these episodes. We've got our regulars. They're great. They're awesome. But I want to hear what the rest of you think, too. Sending in a clip is as easy as recording it on your computer or smartphone and sharing it with me through email or Dropbox. Sending in a single clip is fine, and the reason I want more people participating, each of you have a different taste in comics, a different perspective on comics, and you may find things that the rest of us are just missing. It's flown under our radar, or you know something about it that would convince us to get it. And if you don't participate, then I don't know you're out there listening. You can participate by sending in clips to the Preview Spotlight, or by joining the conversation on the Slack channel and the forum, or by sending in questions for the Monthly Comics Spotlight or the Back Issue Spotlights, Astro City, Legion, Warlord, or just emailing me and letting me know you exist and what you think of the podcast. I do this podcast because I enjoy talking about comics. I think you're listening to this because you enjoy listening and talking about comics. So, join the conversation. Now, the deadline for the Preview Spotlight is normally the second Saturday of the month. Early submissions are always appreciated. You can always check the main page of the Comic Book Page website for the latest information on the next deadline and to sign up for email reminders. The deadline for Preview Spotlight number 208 covering the March solicitations is 9 a.m. Saturday, March 8th, 2025. Again, I want to thank the people who sent in clips, and I want to thank you for listening. Hopefully you discovered something new in this episode, and with that, we'll call it an episode.
thanks for listening to this episode. If you liked this episode, please spread the word about the Comic Group Page podcast by telling your friends and posting a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And please, join our Slack community and let us know what you thought of this episode. I do this podcast because I enjoy talking about comics. So let's talk about comics. The show notes, forum, and instructions for how to join our Slack channel can be found at www.comicbookpage.com. The opinions of the co-hosts and guests are their own. The Comic Book Page podcast is copyright John Mayall. And thanks again for listening.